You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network. I'm Dan Gould. The Senior Statesmen of Virginia continue their tradition of showcasing candidates for local office with this, our second in a two-part series. This month, we'll hear from all eight candidates for Albemarle Board of Supervisors. The decision goes to voters in November. The candidates spoke at the Wednesday, October 9, 2013 meeting of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia. The meeting was held at the Senior Center in Charlottesville. Following the presentation, questions were taken from the audience. The program was moderated by Bob Gibson. Mr. Gibson is the Executive Director of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership at the University of Virginia. He is introduced by SSV Vice President and Program Director Bob McGrath.
We're very pleased today that Bob Gibson is going to be our moderator for this important forum. Bob, many of us know, is the Executive Director of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership. He's a graduate of the University of Virginia. After serving as news director of WCHV Radio, he joined the Daily Progress and has held a number of positions with that newspaper. He began his career covering police and local courts and has covered state and local politics and government. He was named city editor in 1982 and later special projects editor in 1992, where he wrote a series about racial disparities and justice in local courts. In addition to his newspaper work, Bob hosted a weekly political call-in show on WINA Radio in Charlottesville for 7 years. He's also hosted a public radio talk show since 2001 on WVTF-FM in Roanoke and Charlottesville. He's been a regular contributor and a guest on public radio station WAMU's Kojo Namdi show in Washington, and often serves as host of Evening Edition on public radio WVTF. We're grateful to Bob for moderating today's forum, for taking the time out of his busy schedule. Bob?
Thank you, Bob. I should have sent the short bio. It's a pleasure to be here. Welcome. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senior Center and the Senior Statesmen of Virginia's forum, featuring all eight candidates for the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors on the November 5th ballot. We have an excellent forum planned. Each of the eight candidates will have up to five minutes to make introductory remarks, and there will be a timer which all can see in front of them. It will stay green for the first 3.5 minutes, then it'll turn yellow at 4.5 and...
This is very high-tech.
High-tech timer. Turns yellow, and then when it turns red, they're sort of in their last statement, and we'll go on to the next candidate. Very good. I'm glad that that's been rigged up. Then we'll go on to questions. Please print if you have a question so I can actually read it and decipher it and read it to the candidates. And the candidates will have up to 2 minutes to respond to the written questions. I hope we get as many questions in as time permits before 3 o'clock. There's a 3:15 meeting of the Board of Supervisors, so we are finishing the program at 3 o'clock sharp. Now, let's hear from the eight candidates. We will start at this end with Cindy Burkett.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is a true honor to be here today. I want to thank the Senior Statesmen and the Senior Center for hosting this today. I will promise you that I will not take 5 minutes to tell you about myself. I tend to be very succinct. But I do want you to know that I have a bachelor's in law enforcement and corrections from Penn State University. I have a master's from George Mason University in public administration. My husband and I have lived in Albemarle County since 1997. Our son Brian graduated from Albemarle High School in 2001. I have been president or chair of several organizations here in town, including the Newcomers Club of Greater Charlottesville. And while I was president there, you know, we had a really large membership of over 400 folks. And actually, the Republican Women's League was also, we had lots of folks in that one. So the organizations that I've run have had large memberships. I've been married to my husband, Roger, for 36 years. And It's been a wonderful journey for us to live in Arma County. When we had the opportunity to actually move here, we grabbed the chance. I want you to know that I stand on the principles of common sense leadership, innovative thinking, transparency, accountability, integrity, and honor. I have a strong work ethic and am a problem solver. I believe in doing my own research and doing the on-site visits, engaging the public at every stage of the process, staying in touch with the public, and as my parents always told me, always leave things better than you found them. I'm growing up in Central Pennsylvania. I grew up to appreciate, as I don't know if you all know the area in Central Pennsylvania, but that's a very rural area. And my grandfolks, they owned a farm, and I grew up loving the rural area, so I appreciate that part of it. I also, that town was also very close to State College, Pennsylvania, which is the home of Penn State University, so you know how big and urban that was. So I grew up in a very similar kind of place that we live in here. Therefore, I appreciate the need to preserve our rural areas and our environment, but know that I also am ready to do the hard work to address economic vitality and growth. That will keep our county as prosperous and a wonderful place to live. It would truly be an honor to serve Alamo County in this way. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. Also in the Scottsville Magisterial District is Jane Dittmar.
I, too, would like to thank the Senior Statesman and the Senior Center for hosting us today. We've had a number of forums that we have been to. They've had different themes to them, and we've been looking very forward to joining you today. I also see a number of faces in the audience that I admire, and I appreciate that you wanted to come and hear from us. And, of course, my mother is here, and she's our Senior Statesman in my family. I left her home in 1974 to come to the University of Virginia, where I graduated with a degree in economics. And much to the surprise of my parents, I decided to stay here. I decided to stay here because of the beauty of Albemarle County and surrounding areas, and the civility and the opportunity to get to know my neighbors more than you do in urban and suburban areas of Northern Virginia. After I graduated with this economics degree, I realized there really wasn't a lot of demand for a 22-year-old with an economics degree here in Charlottesville for a job. So I decided the best thing to do would be to start my own business, therefore ensuring employment, and eventually grew different businesses and employed other people as well. To continue about my education experience, I've been a lifelong learner. And I did attend the executive program at Darden to learn more hands-on business skills, and then eventually went to Virginia Tech, where I got a certificate in economic development, which fed well into a later job, which I'll tell you about. Finally, and most recently, what's led me to a desire for public service is I went back to Virginia Tech, and they have a wonderful certificate program in local government management, which I finished earlier this year. My jobs in my own companies led to me being asked to be president of the Chamber of Commerce, which I served the chamber and our business community for 9 years, and that was really a wonderful experience. One morning, I'd be working with a very small company, maybe just a mom and pop, two people, and then that afternoon, looking at the needs of maybe our largest employer, GE Fanuc, and all combined, we had 1,800 member businesses that were very diverse. During that time, as president of the chamber, we put together partnerships with the public sector and also the education community for school business alliances, tourism promotion, retention and attraction of new employers, to name a couple of the ones we worked on. And then in 2000, I decided that it was time to do something new, including the fact that I was raising 4 children and wanted something that was not as demanding in terms of time commitment, early morning to evening commitments. So I trained as a mediator, and I've been a professional mediator since then, so for 13 years. And then in 2005, I was asked by the Supreme Court to begin organizing certified mediators to serve in our General District Court, Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court, and circuit courts here in the region. And I've been doing that ever since. I have been involved with nonprofits and other leadership organizations and came to decide that I'd like to run because I'd like to do public service, and I would like to bring these experiences of knowing how a vibrant economy works, knowing how to bring people together that are stuck in diverse positions, maybe not knowing how to come to a common understanding of what would be a good decision for both, and also my love of the community, the rural areas, and the civility that we enjoy among one another. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Our next two candidates are from the Samuel Miller District. First is Liz Palmer.
Hi. Thank you very much for having us here. Thank you to the senior statesman, and of course, thank you to everyone who came here tonight. And it really is an honor to be here. This is seems to be one of the most well attended of the forums. If I'm elected, I want to focus on supporting school excellence. And I'm very proud to have been endorsed by the Albemarle Education Association. I'm committed to protecting our unique natural resources and getting infrastructure that we need, such as the schools, roads, and bike paths. And I'll dedicate myself to maintaining the public trust by involving citizens in all important decisions. A little bit about myself. I moved here in 1996 to be closer to my elderly parents, who moved here in 1975. Unfortunately, my mother was not able to come here tonight, this afternoon, as Jane's was. She's at home. I live in Ivy with my husband. We have four children that attended county public schools, and I've been a practicing veterinarian for over 30 years. I currently own and operate a mobile veterinary practice. I've had a lot of experiences and jobs that have helped me prepare for the job as supervisor. One of those experiences has been serving on the Albemarle County Water Board since 2006. The County Water Authority is a separate legal entity. It gets all its revenues from sale of water and sewer services. And on the board, I've directed my attention to paying for our aging infrastructure and the development and adoption of the 50-year water supply plan that provides citizens with the water they need and protects our rivers at the same time. I've served on rate study committees, investigated strategic planning, advocated policies of that assure that growth pays for growth. I also put forth lifeline rates that keep prices low for small users, and have been a strong supporter of reserve balances, which allowed us to set up construction price allowed us to step up construction projects during the recession to take advantage of low construction costs and also created jobs. I found myself in the unique position of loving infrastructure. I love getting it in and understanding how things work, and it's been an amazing experience for me. The adoption of the 2011 Community Water Supply Plan was a major accomplishment, and that brought environmental and business communities together and also brought the city and county governments together. Over the last 4 years, I've watched with concern the direction the county has been taking. We declined to make important long-term investments in our infrastructure schools, missing the window of low construction costs and interest rates. Public participation has also been a problem, as was seen in the now infamous midnight vote on the Western Bypass. A quote from the Daily Progress in June of 2011 called the vote a show of disrespect, and quote, the law end run around the public amounts to an act of contempt for the public. This is exactly the sort of maneuvering we abhor when it occurs in the halls of Congress. It is even more appalling when it occurs at such close range, end quote. These and other decisions, such as the vote against the women's equality and withdrawing from Cool Counties, paints a picture of Albemarle County government that is letting its leadership role in good governance and environmental protection. We must do better to attract good teachers for our schools and entrepreneurs with vision who will build the technology companies and rural enterprises of the future. Albemarle County is one of the most attractive and desirable places to live in the entire United States because its citizens care. Its local government, reflecting local citizens' involvement, has made tough choices in rural areas to ensure natural resource protection. This protection is essential, not only to our quality of life, but also to the robust economic vitality of Albemarle County. I have made and will continue as a county supervisor to make efforts to ensure that appropriate balances exist to respect and protect our natural resources.
Thank you, Liz. Time
up. Okay.
Our next candidate in the Samuel Miller District is Dwayne Snow.
Good afternoon. My name is Dwayne Snow, and I'm grateful to be here, and I'm grateful to the senior statesmen. As I look at the senior statesmen, I realize that enough of them belong to my Rotary Club that we could actually have a meeting here today. And I'd also like to, thanks. I'd also like to thank our senior citizen for allowing us to use their facilities. And I'd like to welcome Bob Gibson here. He's always been a great man and someone that I've looked up to. And I appreciate you being here, Bob. I was born and raised in the Charlottesville-Albemarle County area. My family actually goes back about five or six generations. My mother's family lived up on the Blue Ridge Parkway. It wasn't a parkway at that point. And they were moved off of the mountain during the CCC project that actually built the parkway. Rena and I have been married for 46 years. We have five children, all went to county schools and brought up in this area. We have 14 grandchildren, and they really help keep you young. I ran Snow's Garden Center for 35 years. My grandfather started it in 1912. My father took over in the 30s. I took over in the 70s, and I turned it over to my sons in 2003. So our roots are literally planted deep in this area. And I'm grateful for this heritage, and I'm grateful for the beautiful part of the world we live in. I don't think there's many days that I don't wake up and think, boy, what a great place to live. And I realize that a lot of you are members of the Senior Center, and I know you do a lot of driving and traveling. But when you come home at the end of your travel period, it always feels good to come home to the beauty that's here. And you realize that there's really not any place on this earth any prettier than what I think Charlottesville is in Albemarle County. Some of the things I've learned over the years that I think are especially important, you know, being active in running a business, you meet so many people every day. Being involved in the Rotary Club, being involved in on boards and commissions, and working through with people across all different backgrounds and religions and things such as that. One thing I've found to be absolutely true: there's not one organization that has a lock on good people or the truth, and that we can learn a lot from each other, regardless of what our backgrounds, where we are on our backgrounds. And that's one of the things that I think that I have a unique opportunity to work across party lines, because I do respect those of different ideas, and realize that as we talk and as we, you know, look at the issues from different viewpoints, that we can often come up with a better idea than what we would have gotten if we had just looked at it from one specific direction, thinking, well, everything I think is right. My wife would tell you that's nowhere near right. But one of the things that has been extremely important to me, and I made it clear from day one when I ran for the first time, was that I was very interested in schools. So many politicians, if you look at everyone's platform, it's always, I'm concerned about schools. When have you ever heard a politician not say that? But when they get in the office, does their rhetoric or does their campaign platform match what they say? Over the last 4 years, I have been extremely committed to schools. I realize that our students, our children, are 100% of our future, and that it is important that we make sure that they have an excellent start in the school system, that they have, if they need Bright Stars, if they need Head Start to get that initial bump, then we need to fund it. I have a letter from Eric Strucco, and I've shared it with many of you before. Eric, let me just make this clear, has not endorsed my campaign. In fact, I fully expect him to issue a statement soon endorsing Liz and her campaign. And that's great. That's what you would expect a Democrat to do for one of their fellow people. But that's okay. I don't have any problem with that. The main thing that I want you to understand from this letter, it's not a letter. What it is, it's a letter stating the work that we were able to accomplish together.
Thank you,
across
Dwayne.
Party lines, and that's important. Sorry.
Thank you, Dwayne Snow. Before we go on to the Rio District candidates, we have a bipartisan request from the candidates on this end of the table that we leave the air conditioning off for a while, both so people can hear and also because it's getting cold up here. Our next two candidates are from the Rio District, and speaking first is Brad Sheffield.
I'd like to thank you all for the opportunity to speak today about my candidacy. I really do appreciate it. I was raised here in Virginia. I claim Hanover as my home. That's where I came into adulthood, and I'm pretty proud that I'm raising my two daughters here as well. I have a 14-year-old and a 9-year-old, and I'm pretty proud of them and pretty proud of the direction that they're going. I graduated here from UVA. I graduated with a degree in planning, both in my bachelor's and master's degree, because I found out that's what I loved. And I'll get into that a little bit, but it's what I've decided was my career path. And so from there, I spent 15 years working in the transportation and land use industry, working on a variety of projects, working on big transit studies, land use studies, the way transportation and land use integrate with each other, all those type of things. So it's definitely been a very fruitful career for me because I love talking about transportation. It's one of the most interesting things to me. And while I've only lived in a few places in my life, I've been very fortunate to travel around the entire southeast of the United States working on these variety of projects. And I've gotten chances to work side by side with a lot of people in a lot of different communities, working with planning commissions, elected officials, variety of stakeholders, and most importantly, the public, working with them to build better ideas and help them moving towards the goals that they have set for themselves. So, I've got a lot of experience in that kind of area, and I know that that's the kind of stuff that I'll be able to bring to the Board of Supervisors to help inform those decisions that we're making at that level more intelligently. For me, a lot of people ask, why are you running? And, of course, I just told you I'm a transportation land use planner. That's definitely why I'm running, is because I look around and I see that there's decisions that we need to be making that really need to reflect the direction we're going in. And I think we're getting off course on some small decisions that add up to the bigger vision. And for me, I don't make my background and my history any secret. If you've been following my campaign, you should know where I'm coming from. I know what it means to work hard and to establish your place in life. But what I also have learned along the way is that what it means to have a very strong community. A strong community that provides you access to education, quality education, to jobs, to having quality medical services, being able to have recreation. We're so fortunate to live in this county. We're so close to the mountains. We're so close to the beach. We have so much. And, a lot of those things that add to the quality of life. I know what the value of that is. And that's why I'm running, is because I want to be the supervisor that's helping us build a community that helps everybody succeed, that helps everybody be a better citizen. So when I look at being supervisor, my approach really does focus on transportation and land use. That is my bailiwick. I bring that type of perspective to the board, and I think that's what's important. When you get a board of supervisors, you want each supervisor to bring a certain specialty to the board so that discussion can really harvest some really good consensus. So what I really do expect to do when I'm a supervisor is to work with the residents, work with the stakeholders, work with businesses, you know, figure out what our problems are, figure out what solutions we need to implement them, build the consensus and get those implemented, you know, as quickly as possible so we can keep moving forward like we need to. So I hope what you hear today you like, and I hope that I could earn your vote if you live in the Rio District on November 5th. So thank you.
Thank you, Brad Sheffield. Our next candidate is Rodney Thomas.
Well, hello to everyone. I want to thank the Senior Center and the Senior Statesman for hosting this forum today. I'd like to thank Bob Gibson, which I've known for a long time, and I just hope he stays serious during this entire program. We may have to get him straight. I don't know yet. But anyway, I'm a lifelong resident of Charlottesville, Albemarle area. I grew up in Charlottesville and attended Clark Elementary School, Vernon Moran Elementary School, and then went to Lane and graduated from Lane in 1962. I worked for the Daily Progress and World newspapers until 1979, at which time I purchased Charlottesville Press. In 1982, I started another printing company in Charlottesville. In 1984, I purchased three companies in Waynesboro and then combined them into one. Now I'm down to one, Charlottesville Press, and it's much easier. I'm a U.S. Army veteran. I'm a past board member of the Boys and Girls Club. Actually, I'm one of the original board members of the Boys and Girls Club that started Boys and Girls Club here, and it's what a fantastic organization that has turned out to be. YMCA was a board member for 25 years. Printing Industries of Virginia, which is my industry. Crime Stoppers, which is one of my favorite, and also past president of the Charlottesville Host Lions Club and a state officer in the Lions Club. In 1998, I was named Small Business Person of the Year by the Charlottesville-Albemarle Regional Chamber of Commerce. In 1999, I completed the Virginia Certified Planning Commissioners Program, which I really enjoyed. I had to take that through an instructor from Virginia Tech, though. That was the only problem. And that wasn't a problem either because he's a good friend of mine now. That same year, I completed the Sorenson Institute for Political Leadership at UVA. I am a past member of Sorenson's Regional Board of Directors, and we interviewed candidates to attend Sorenson. I really enjoyed that. I was appointed to the Albemarle County Planning Commission, Rio District, and served through 2005. I also served as chairman in 2004. While on the commission, I served on the MPO Tech, PAC, Eastern Initiative Committee, and numerous other county-related committees. Presently, I am a Board of Supervisors member representing this district we are sitting in right now. My wife, Nancy, and I have two children, a daughter and a son. We've been married 46 years, just like my good buddy, Dwayne. By the way, we kind of grew up together in Belmont, and then we moved down off of Park Street, and we still went to school at Burnham Rand together. So he just couldn't get rid of me. My son and Stacy have four children. My daughter, Ashley, and her husband, Aaron, they live in Denver. They have four boys, twins, set of twins, too. Nancy and I have lived in Carsbrook for 40 enjoyable years, where we raised both of our children. Thank you.
Thank you, Rodney Thomas. Our next two candidates are from the Jack Jewett Magisterial District. Speaking first will be Diantha McKeel.
Good afternoon. I am Diantha McKeel. As a member of the Senior Statesman, I want to thank Bob, the program organizers, members, and all of the attendees. I appreciate the work it takes to offer a really quality program such as this almost every month. A little bit about me. I grew up in Stanton. I'm the daughter of a small businessman. I have a BA in sociology. I'm a former elementary school teacher, and I currently work as a clinical research coordinator. Albemarle County and the Jack Jewett District have been home for 37 years. I organized an Adopt-a-Highway team now in its 17th year of pickup. I've chaired a committee for the municipal band to pay off their building mortgage, and I've served on the Mental Health Association board. I've been elected four times to the Albemarle County School Board and by my peers to two terms as chair. The Virginia School Board Association has given me their awards of honor and distinction. I led the school system to join the Chamber of Commerce, supporting local workforce development, and created the Albemarle County VIP Gold Card Program for senior citizens, recognizing the value of elders in our community as assets. The FISH program is an example. The VIP Gold Card offers seniors free admission to school athletic events and drama productions. And you may have heard Gordon Walker and myself advertising this program on the radio. I brought applications, and they're on my table over there. And if you'd like to leave me a completed one, I'd be happy to take it back and turn it in for you. They'll send you a card in the mail. I'm a graduate of the Albemarle County Citizens Police Academy and currently serve as Chief of Police Colonel Sellers' appointee on the Albemarle County Police Anti-Gang Task Force. We call it GRACE. These are my beliefs and values that guide my decisions. I'd like to just share these with you this afternoon. An outstanding public school system is a critical linchpin to our community's economic vitality, as well as to the children and families it serves. When schools fail, communities fail. Environmentally friendly practices and economic growth and prosperity are not mutually exclusive. Preservation of Albemarle's rural character is essential to our community's quality of life and to the economy, even through tourism. Our community has a larger population of seniors now, and we need to make sure that there are adequate services for people to age in place in their homes for as long as possible. The comprehensive plan should address age-friendly community planning. Albemarle County government must be very respectful of taxpayer dollars and thoroughly determine the best use of limited resources. I have a record of improving performance in the classroom, as evidenced by Albemarle County student test scores and graduation rates, while voting to reduce more than $4 million in costs. Businesses and entrepreneurs must be supported to create job opportunities for our local workforce. One area of entrepreneurship growth is linked to the research talent that we see at University of Virginia. We need to create and increase our business tax base in order to stop relying so heavily on property taxes to provide necessary services. And finally, many citizens don't recognize where Charlottesville ends and Albemarle County begins. It's imperative that Charlottesville, Albemarle, and UVA pursue opportunities to cooperate while recognizing and respectfully honoring their strengths and differences. I make my decisions fairly, objectively, and based on best practice and information, and by engaging as many people as possible who are knowledgeable about the issues. That's why I have established a Common Ground Council advisory group consisting of people who are local experts and knowledgeable in transportation, growth, development, environmental protections, business, and historic resources. This council has agreed to be nonpartisan and to help me determine the implications of county policy, seeking common ground and consensus whenever possible. I'll be asking additional community leaders to join this council as time goes on. I hope to use my experiences and my background at the Board of Supervisor level to be a good supervisor and to continue my service to the community. And I thank you.
Thank you, Diantha McKeel. Our next candidate from the Jack Jewett Magisterial District is Philip C.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. How are you? Good? I hope so. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. Thank you for attending. My name is Philip C. I am the independent candidate running for the Jack Jewett seat. I have been in Albemarle County since 1998. I was born in Lynchburg, Virginia, and grew up in Appomattox County. This is my first experience running for an elected office. I'm not a professional politician, nor near to be. I am basically a non-mover and shaker in local affairs, seeking an elected office. I am an average tax-paying resident that still believes in the idea of government by the people, not the politicians, agendas of political parties, or special interest. For the past 28-plus years, I have been a public servant. First as a county law enforcement officer, a state juvenile court services probation officer, a high school and middle school teacher teaching civics and government and economics, an administrator, a coach at both public and private schools, and since 2006, the full-time executive director and director of a national youth development organization known as the First Tee. Some of you may have heard of it. We teach age-appropriate life skills, core values, and healthy habits to children ages 5 to 18 through the medium of sport. And I began this chapter here in Charlottesville in 2002, and it is sponsored through a city government. Next page. What are my concerns? Contrary to popular belief that's floating around the community, yes, something is going on in my head. I'm going to work to ensure that our tax dollars are being spent on the goods and services that our county government, is duty-bound to provide. Excuse me one second. I believe in fiscal responsibility to you and to myself. These are my major issues, and in no given order. But first and foremost is public safety, law enforcement, fire and rescue, and readiness for man-made and natural emergencies. Do we have adequate staffing? Do we have adequate training and recertification opportunities? Is our equipment up to date? And forming local and regional partnerships for our emergency services. Another issue is transportation. We want it to be sensible and efficient. We need adequate roads. We need bus services and pedestrian needs to be addressed. Education is a concern, although I have, our folks here at Albemarle County have been doing a really good job. But you want to continue that, and you want to continue that the needs of the classroom teachers are met in preparing and challenging our youth for the future. Preschool activities, and as well as technical and job readiness for the non-traditional student. You know, I didn't start my college career until 6 years after high school. I went to work. And then I changed my mind and went, this education thing is pretty good. Just as important, human rights. Adhering to the equality and protection of rights of all of our residents and visitors by our Constitution, the Bill of Rights, our state constitution, and the various Supreme Court rulings and acts of Congress. Protection of air, water, and land from a local and regional and global approach. Attracting and retaining sustainable employment opportunities that provide adequate income for a progressive standard of living. It's one thing to have a job, but you need a job that's going to be able to allow you to live here and spend your money in the community. Retaining established businesses. We don't want them to go away. Understanding and protection of property rights. There's a lot of issues to be discussed there. Concerns and needs of a growing senior population. Increasing accessibility and attendance to Board of Supervisors meetings. It's quite a task, a lot to do, but I look forward to the opportunity and the challenges, knowing that this is a partnership with you. It's not about me, folks. After all, we do work for you. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Philip C. We have enough good questions here to extend the session until 7 p.m., so the Senior Center is being asked if we can order out some pizza. And coats, yes. They have promised to turn the air conditioning off as opposed to down. If it's a good question, it's one that you all have written. If it's a silly question, it's one that I have written. I will start at the other end with Philip C. Question number one, 2 minutes response up to that time period. Current policy in Albemarle County forbids paid firefighters from volunteering as a firefighter on their own time off. All of the fire chiefs from the volunteer fire departments support a change in this policy. If elected, would you vote to change this policy and allow paid firefighters to volunteer on their time off as volunteer firefighters? Philip C.
Yes, and the reason for that, because when I was in law enforcement, I worked with many folks that, for example, we would be paid law enforcement, but we would volunteer for rescue or fire protection. I think you're losing a valuable resource if an individual wants to volunteer their time and put their energy and effort in the safeguarding of their community and working with their folks. We should not get in the way of allowing that to happen.
Thank you, Diantha.
My first response would be yes, but I have to say that there must be a reason why there's a policy against it. And I'm not real sure without talking to various people, both firefighters and policymakers, everything has a consequence. So I'm not really sure that I know enough to give you a definitive answer. But as I said, my inclination would be probably yes.
Thank you, Diantha. Rodney?
I would like to say yes, but we have a little group called Fair Labor that intervenes on some of these things. We could probably do it. A lot of fire companies do it, and they're taking a chance. If someone would report to the National Labor Relations Board of Fair Labor that I've been working and I haven't been paid, you could face a lawsuit of $500,000. I think it's not right that these ladies and gentlemen, firefighters, cannot do that. I think it would benefit our county, but do we gamble? Do we throw the dice out there and say, well, we're not going to get caught? I'm not a gambler. Personally, I'm not, and I'm not in business. So I would like to, but probably not.
Thank you, Rodney. Brad?
Yes, I do. Looking at the counties around us, many of them do it already. Hanover County, where I'm from, they do it there. I actually know somebody who's a paid chief for one station, then he volunteers to be a chief at another station. You know, talking to him, if they had to enact something like this, it would probably cut their participation almost in half. So, yes, I do support it.
Thank you, Brad. Liz? Okay, Dwayne.
Whoever.
Same district.
This recently came up on our board, and we had quite a discussion on it. It's easy to say, yes, we want to do this. It's an obvious thing to do, and I am 100% for doing it. The problem is there are legal implications with this. But as Rodney's already pointed out, there are other people who are doing this. And so my attitude is, so often we look at things and say, oh, we can't do this, and we state the reasons why we can't. I feel like we need to start adopting the attitude, what do we do to make it happen? And so at the last meeting, I recommended that we don't make a decision, that we go out and see what we can do to come up with a solution that would make this happen, put safeguards in that would help protect your money should a suit come, and to allow the firefighters to do what they love to do. You know, a lot of these firefighters have come up and been volunteers. Then all of a sudden, with all the experience that they've had, they've been offered a paying position, and they've accepted it, but they still want to volunteer. And I think we need to look at a way to make that happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Dwayne. Liz?
I would like to see it happen. I've talked to the fire chiefs. I've talked to other board members, county board members, and I understand the legal aspects of it. I do think that we could design a waiver that would take some of the liability. I know waivers aren't 100%, but I think they could be significant in taking a lot of the liability away. And so, yes, I'm for it.
Thank you. Thank you. Jane.
I'm so pleased somebody asked this question. I had the pleasure of working with Chief Eggleston, who's our fire chief, on a project that lasted from November till May of this year, on issues to support and strengthen the volunteer side of our fire department and work well with our career side. This was an issue for our volunteer firefighters. It stems from a lawsuit in Maryland where some volunteers decided that they were putting in many hours at their volunteer station, but also worked on the career side. It wasn't a Virginia decision. However, it did impact our county attorney's advice to our current board about whether or not they should allow it. In studying the departments that have do allow volunteers from the career side to go back to their home stations and be with the men and women that they've worked with for so long, it is a waiver. There are liability waivers and promises that must be made in writing, and there are already models out there for us to use. I think we should go through proper legal review again and make sure it satisfies exactly what our county attorney and our board members want. But it can be done, and I would love to support something like that.
Thank you. Cindy?
I also have talked to a lot of volunteer firemen and the chief, actually, of the Scottsville District, and that it is totally a frustration for them not being able to volunteer in their home district. I would support that, and I do think, as others have spoken before, that there is a way of doing it. We just need to find a way to make it happen.
Thank you, Cindy. Now we're going to start at this end and work down the table as we started. The next question, smart growth, quote unquote, gets you to the same place as, quote unquote, dumb growth, only more eloquently, elegantly. Are you dedicated to not supersizing Albemarle County? If so, how? Cindy?
I assume that we're talking about super growth in terms of businesses and or...
I think all types of growth.
All types of growth. Well, no, super growth is obviously not something that anybody would want to entertain in our county. That's not what we're about. But you hate to use words like smart growth, but that is, in fact, is what needs to happen. We need to, any developmental issue or project that comes before the board needs to be looked at on its own merits. I would propose that we continue to be smart about the businesses that we let in, but encourage that. Albemarle County needs to set a tone that says we are here, we want to grow, but we want to grow in a way that is the best for the folks that live here already. And I think that there is a way of having a harmony between growth and protecting our environment in our rural areas. So, no, super growth, no, but growth in a very thoughtful way, absolutely.
Thank you, Cindy. Jane.
To whomever wrote that question, I want to go on record as being against stupid growth. I have a couple of thoughts. First of all, I think that what I would like to suggest would be a wonderful way of working towards a regional economy, and specifically Albemarle County, that is growing in dollars and managing its growth effectively, would be to make sure that we keep the growth area at a certain place, which is, I'm very comfortable with where it is now, allow the rural area to be protected, and then put our investments in the infrastructure that is required to support growth in the growth area. I believe that companies do their own market studies to come to the area, that we can encourage certain types of employers based on now studies that we've just done about the kinds of people we have here and their training and what would be appropriate. So that would be a good thing. I believe in encouraging tourists to come here. They support a tax base, and then they go back to their own homes, and we get to enjoy the dollars that are circulating. So I think, summarizing, my idea of how we impact growth as a county government is we protect the rural areas, confine the growth area, but give it enough capacity for housing and good employers, and then use some attraction dollars to bring in employers to employ our people and tourists to spend their money here.
Thank you, Jane. Liz?
I think that for the last several decades, this community has done the very hard work of demarcating the development areas. And I'm very proud to be in a community with that much forethought. I think that we should keep the growth areas hard edges and keep the rural areas rural. There's a variety of things we need to do to make that happen. I think one of the things that, because it is very important to have good economic base and to have good companies here, because we can't rely entirely on property taxes. Nobody wants to do that. But we also want new people coming into the community. So I think that it's important to make the urban area attractive for people to live in with greenways and not just park it. Pocket parks, but to make it attractive. I have kids that, for instance, they're high-tech types and they don't want to move back here because they can't ride a bike to work, things like that. And we have a urban ring that's impenetrable to bikes. And although many of us here might not ride them, younger people do. So I think that's very important, making the urban area more attractive. And the rural areas, we do have a very fine balance there, because people do have to make a living on their land. We do have to allow the vineyards to, and other farms to do what they need to do to make a living. I'm very encouraged about the food hub and buy local program. I think that's a wonderful. It's almost a food renaissance. There's so many new jobs and people getting involved in that. So I'd like to see local government support that in any way they can. And I'm my time's almost up. So,
thank you, Liz. Dwayne.
I fully support the plan that we have right now. We have approximately 5% of our area designated as growth. But actually, we're down 1%. We took out Biscuit Run, and we've taken out some other large projects and put them into green space. So we are down roughly 1%. But I am in favor of adding that 1% back in. But I am also in favor of keeping it down to roughly 5%, leaving 95% of our area rural. Right now, in that 5% designated growth area, we have 56% of our population living in the rural area, in the urban area. And the other 44% of our population lives out on the 95% that is rural. And so I think that's a great mix, because that helps keep our rural areas rural and helps keep this area that we all love and admire beautiful and something that we can enjoy and our children can enjoy. I think one of the main ways that we do this is through good, sound economic development principles. We need, and that we have developed an economic development policy over the last few years, where we are striving to bring businesses to this area, well-paying jobs, jobs that will create career ladder opportunities and jobs for our children so that they can stay in the area, but will not bring a lot of people in with them. And by following this plan, we will be able to have, in my opinion, the best of both worlds. Thank you.
Thanks, Dwayne. Quick follow-up. Is any of that 1% add back to the urban area going to be in the Samuel Miller Magisterial District?
No. I was trying to think. You know, we don't have any planned growth right now for that area. The extra 1% would come in from infill and things that would make sense. But right now, there's nothing planned or even on the drawing board, even being suggested for the Samuel Miller District.
Thank you, Dwayne. Brad.
Well, I can say, as a planner, smart growth, that those terminologies definitely float around in my circle. And I can tell you it's a little bit of an antiquated term now, because we realize that we can't just put out a blanket term to cover everything that we're trying to accomplish in a community like this. So we started to focus on specific strategies and specific settings. And Albemarle County used to be held up as a great national example of the direction it was going with creating its neighborhoods, creating its business districts, and its transportation projects. So it's interesting that we've kind of fallen from that. We're not following the path that we had at one time, where we were trying to create places. You know, we've got a growth area, and I'm committed to staying within that, because we've got a lot of stuff that still hasn't been built. Millions of non-residential square feet has yet to be built in the growth area. Thousands of residential homes have yet to be built in the growth area. So we've got a lot of growth that's still supposed to be happening at some point. And on top of that, we've got a lot of infrastructure, a lot of maintenance that still has to be focused on. We have a lot of redevelopment that possibly needs to happen in the growth area. We still have a lot of potential in our existing growth area that I think we need to harvest, kind of foster, and make that work before we're encouraging more. Because if we can't make what we have now work, then we're not going to be able to make the future stuff work. And what I'm talking about is, you go on Commonwealth Drive, because of the traffic pressures, that's a dangerous road to walk on. You go on Northfield, it's a dangerous road to walk on. These are neighborhood roads. How are we going to make sure that they become residential roads again before we encourage more growth? So those are the questions that I pose out there, because until we can solve those problems, I don't think we should be encouraging more problems. And I'll get back to talking about, you know, these places that, that we talked about in the past of creating. Hollymead Town Center was one of these visions. Stonefield was one of these visions. Even the neighborhood I live in was one of these visions. And it was this idea of walkability, getting beyond just dependent on an automobile, creating those places that kind of emulate the characteristics that people love in the city of Charlottesville, but bring them out into Albemarle County so that we can give what people are looking for and they don't have to travel or get in their car to go to downtown Charlottesville to enjoy walking around. And I think we've gotten away from that. You know, we have some really good potential, and I think we need to kind of identify that and get behind the developers that are really willing to step out of their comfort zones and work to develop those kind of places.
Thank you, Brad. Rodney.
Well, the plan was of a neighborhood model that was now was part of the commission when we created the neighborhood model. It's not the neighborhood model. It's a model. It's 12 steps in there, and you can pick and choose, and you don't have to use them all. It doesn't have to be exactly like that. But it is the best way to develop today because it does create that pod, so to speak, and I think it was a two-mile radius across the circle. And you could walk anywhere in that circle that you wanted to the cleaners, to the laundry, to anything you wanted to go to. I'll take it back to that same thing Dwayne was talking about, too. 5% of the county is growth area, but we are lacking a little bit. We're off of that percentage a little bit right now. I would like to see a hard edge on that 5%, not over 5%. If we're going to put anything back, I would like want it to be stay right at the 5. We're doing a really good job of protecting our rural areas. We have ACE program. We have conservation easements. We have ag forest. And these people that do that, put their land in these conservation easements, get a tax break because of their property. Plus, they're doing good for Albemarle County at keeping the open spaces. I think our farmers deserve a pat on the back They're the good stewards of Albemarle County that have kept our open space. I will add to that. It's not a little off the subject, but I do believe in the land use tax break that farmers get. I think it's beneficial to them, and it keeps them in business. It keeps them feeding themselves. Farmers don't make a whole lot of money. They have to sort of reach around and grab things to make it work. But they are the ones that protect our open space. That's about all I have.
Thank you, Rodney. Diantha?
I support the growth areas. I think that right now we have plenty of land in our growth area. It's about 3.5 times the size of Charlottesville. So there's lots of undeveloped areas or areas that can be retooled. I do think it's important to support economic development, and I would encourage looking at what we can do within the growth area to help our businesses and entrepreneurs want to open businesses and look at smart growth that way. It was interesting at the forum, the TomTom forum, where all of us attend, or most of us attended, I guess. One of the things that the entrepreneurs were talking about from the University of Virginia, a sampling of the 84 businesses that have been started in this area as from the University of Virginia, the biosciences, they all said that they wanted to live in urban areas, but they wanted green spaces, and they want to be able to walk. They want to be able to meet together. And I see an urban ring right now, to sort of piggyback on what Brad was saying, that needs some work. I live in a neighborhood right off Barracks Road, and we have bus stops on both sides of our road, but no sidewalk. And when you stand in the bus stop, you're almost down in the drainage ditch. So if we want people to live in the urban ring and we want to keep our rural areas rural, we need to support the infrastructure and that people want, and we really need to look at the infrastructure and the neighborhoods that we have and support those.
Thank you, Diantha. Philip?
Well, obviously, it's a balancing act. And there appears to be a good sense plan in place. There is some question as what is being followed and what is not being followed. But you can't outrun your natural resources, plain and simple. You can't do that. You can't outrun what infrastructure you have to support growth. So you're going to have to do your homework and develop what infrastructure that to support what is coming, or more importantly, the needs and the wants second. And also, we have to be open-minded and include all stakeholders in these discussions, and you know, not just the group that's screaming the loudest. And that's incumbent upon, I think, the board and county staff to include those folks when we're having these discussions. Don't wait till the last minute, oh, by the way, we're doing this across the road from you. Engage you and try to get you to be a partner with it.
Thank you, Philip. This next question shows how much all politics is truly local. We're going to start with Rodney, to whom it's first intended, and work back this way and then wrap around. Rodney, what do you believe will be the impacts, positive and or negative, of the Hillsdale Drive extension?
Well, the Hillsdale Drive is, by the way, it's totally financed. All four things that Dwayne and I asked for are the money's in the bank for them right now. But anyway, I thought eventually it might be. I mean, when we first started planning that, when I was on the Plan Commission, it sounded like a really good idea to put a parallel road in. But Brad mentioned Commonwealth Drive. I just about got killed over there when I was campaigning back in 09. Buses, tractor trailers come through. That's a residential area, and they're cutting through there to get to Rio Road, probably to that convenience store. I'm not a real fan of parallel roads. I'm afraid that, I worked real hard. Let me back. I worked real hard to get these sidewalks in on the street right here and on the other side going up Hillsdale. Because of the senior centers, the senior people that live in this area, Branch Lands, and I knew eventually something would be redeveloped on 29 so they could walk to 29 without getting hit. I can imagine, and I don't want to really be negative about it because it might work great, but I can imagine when the cars get to Rio Road, they're going to say, oh, I'm not going back to 29. They'll go around Northfields Road. And I'm really afraid of that. Of that happening. I don't think it's going to work 100%, no.
Thank you, Rodney. Brad?
This is definitely a transportation-related project. So, you know, I've been thinking about this even before I decided to run. Because when roads like this get funded, I think we have to start thinking about the impacts, hopefully even before they get funded. But once we know that they're going to start getting built, we have to understand, you know, what are going to be the negative impacts, but what are the potential benefits? The benefits are traffic flow. This type of road is projected to take, if not the same, but maybe more traffic off than the Western Bypass. So we have to understand, okay, so this is going to be a focus. So what do we need to do to make sure we're slowing down the traffic and integrating the road with the land uses that are either there or expected to come along in the future? So for me, I look at Park Street. I look at some of the stuff the city has done to start to slow down traffic in their neighborhoods. And I agree with Rodney on the fact that Northfield is going to be negatively impacted, without a doubt. But how do you solve that? You solve that by directing the flow. We can do that through signalization. You know, you got the sticks and the carrots when you do transportation planning. You try to figure out how you can dangle the carrots to get people to go a certain direction, and you put the sticks up from the other way. Northfield, we need to make it more difficult for people to cut through. And with Hillsdale, you got to make sure that you're finding ways to slow down traffic. Make sure they realize that there's people who are going to be walking around. Make sure they realize that a bus could be stopping at some point picking somebody up. That way they know that they're going to slow down. You know, this is something I ran into in my own neighborhood. You know, the county was looking at taking the parking off my streets, and that was going to exponentially increase the speed in my neighborhood. My daughters, who are running around playing, were going to be at risk. And I don't want that in any other community. We fought to keep the cars on the road, and so I think we should put cars on the parked on the song alongside the road of Hillsdale. I mean, those are the kind of things that slow down traffic, and that's what we need to be thinking about. We can't just build a road and then hope for the best. I think we have to know what we're asking for and then make sure that we're planning to mitigate any of the negative impacts related to it.
Thank you, Brad. Dwayne?
I think with all projects, there's always the pros and cons. But I think in this case, the pros are going to outweigh the cons. And the reason I say that is, if you think about it, if you live on this side of town or you're here at the senior center, you have the opportunity of getting on your bike, riding down to Whole Foods. You can come up and go in, be able to go right into Seminole Square and do shopping there. You can also come up to the mall and never once have to get on 29. Right now, if you wanted to go to any of those places, you go out to 29, you go into one, you go back out to 29, come back into the other one, go back out to the 29, come down around and go into Whole Foods. So it's, I think it's going to be a great asset to the people that live on this side of town that they can go, whether it's grocery shopping or shopping for the other things they need, whether it's cleaners or anything else, they've got access to those things without ever having to get on 29 once.
Thank you, Dwayne. Liz?
I think I heard the history of Hillsdale Road recently, and I thought it was, I didn't realize that it was part of our long-range transportation plan all along until the Pepsi plant was built here, and that stymied the extension. I do think that it's an important connecting road. I do also see the problems. I've been on some of these roads and how fast the cars drive. So I do think we need to mitigate those problems. And I would like to see our transportation planners come up with a really good plan for that with signals and things to slow down the traffic. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz. Jane?
I really like the fact that we've planned for the Hillsdale Drive extension. I agree that there are there's more planning and perfecting to do to create it as a road that is safe for cyclists, for pedestrians, and for the cars. I'd like to add to that I really like the idea of Berkmar extended all the way up to the airport. I think both of these parallel roads are needed and will reduce congestion on 29.
Thank you, Jane. Cindy?
Well, I think it's sort of a unanimous thought that the best part of this is by far is getting traffic off of 29 to help with that congestion. And of course, as it was stated by several others, we do need to mitigate the fragility, if you will, of making sure that the speed is the correct speed and that the roads are well lit, or that if we have bike roads on or bike paths on the sides, that they're well marked, and all the things that you would want in a parallel road to 29. But overall, I think that it will be, the pros outweigh the cons.
Thank you, Cindy. Philip.
Hello. There we go. I'm getting up to speed on this with the projects and so forth. It's tied to the bypass and the three-party agreement years ago and so forth. But as I understand it, this was on the books long ago. It's now fully funded. But again, it's fully funded, and you heard the concerns brought up right here about certain aspects of the road. So it's funded. We would hope that county leaders and so forth and VDOT would sit down and make sure that this is truly a safe road.
Thank you, Philip. Diantha.
I think we have to remember that the traffic on 29 basically is us. 8 to 10% of the traffic is not us. So we have to figure out how to deal with us. And part of that, I really believe, is parallel roads. So I think we need the parallel roads. I live very close to one of the parallel roads. If you want to think about Barracks Road and Georgetown, because certainly those are two roads that people use when they want to get away from 29 North. So I go back to, yes, I'm supportive of the parallel roads, but we have to make sure that the parallel roads themselves have sidewalks, have bike trails even, are maintained, that their bus stops are adequate, and that they are fully funded and that they are built.
Thank you,
Doug. I think, it's been so long. It would be helpful if you'd repeat the question occasionally for us when you're the very last one, Bob.
Sure, sure.
Maybe halfway through.
That's a good idea. This is the next question that's more universal, and I'll repeat it halfway through. We'll start here with Cindy and head east. Half of those who live past age 85 will have cognitive issues such as dementia. What health care, social supports, and financial arrangements would serve those affected by this challenging situation?
Well, I guess at the outset, I would say that the county as a government, we do have, obviously, obligations to the citizenry despite their age. I'm not sure that we, as a county government, would be in the place to be the funder of a lot of these things. However, we certainly should work in tandem with organizations like the Alzheimer's Association. My mom had Alzheimer's, and I know that the Alzheimer's Association was a huge help to us, and as we went down that had that journey with my mom. But JABA, making sure that folks have a way to and from, doctor visits, using Jaunt. And making it easy. I know that I was talking to somebody in the Blue Ridge Builders Association, and they also have organizations that help out with those things. So what I would like to see is I would like to work with all of those and make it a community effort, and that is something that I probably would even volunteer to do. That's one of the things I have said throughout my campaign, is that in order to make these things work, you need to volunteer. You need to be a part of that. So I would probably make sure that I was part of that process.
Thank you, Cindy. Jane?
Similarly, I would like to compliment the Alzheimer's Association. Sue Friedman has done amazing things with it, both education and development of regional and statewide programs. Once you look at JABA and Jaunt, you are looking at a participation or commingling of some public funds. And I know that, especially since people with growing dementia rely, if they have family, on care from family members, and these family members may be still working or even still caring for their own children, that it's important to have services for, as Cindy said, transportation to doctors and programs, especially during the day. The senior center down in Scottsville, which we've both visited at different times, has special programs through JABA, which I think are very effective. But I also think just growing awareness and helping those that are specifically tasked with serving our elderly or even middle-aged that have Alzheimer's and dementia would be something that we could do as a public service.
Thanks, Jane. Liz?
I think this is a huge problem as we, all of us, age. We all know what the demographics look like. I think that organizations like JABA are vital to this. There's a multiplier effect that you get when government puts money into organizations like JABA that also gets a lot of private funding from donations. And I would be very much in favor of supporting that and having more satellite facilities. We've been talking about one at Esmont. There are other areas in the community that we could do that. The Jaunt is also very important. It's very difficult for people to get to doctor's appointments when we don't necessarily want people that are having cognitive problems driving. And so I think we really need to beef up the support of Jaunt. My parents have used Jaunt, and I find it to be a wonderful facility. And I think thank you.
Thanks, Liz. Dwayne?
I'm very concerned about the aging population that we have. In fact, that's one of the, there's two different segments of our society that I think are at risk. One is children, and the other is an aging population. I know there's lots of people that are suffering from cognitive issues, who sit alone all day long in their apartment. They have no one looks in on them. No one's making sure they're taking their medications, and it's a serious problem. And I'm aware of it. I can give you names of individuals that are having these problems, and a lot of people are doing a lot of good work. I applaud JABA for the great work that they're doing. I've been involved with them personally and with our business, but it's important that we get involved as a community. This is not something that's going to be solved by a government. It's got to be something that more and more individuals and organizations, whether it's Rotary, our Lions Club, or some of the other organizations that are out there, we need to start thinking about that and thinking about what we can do as a community to make sure that these people are looked at after on so many different levels. Thank you.
Thank you, Dwayne. I'll repeat the question for the latter. Half of the panel, half of those who live past 85 will have cognitive issues such as dementia. What health care, social supports, and financial arrangements would serve those affected by this challenging situation? Brad?
Well, for those who might not know, I'm the assistant director at Jaunt, and so this is actually something that we talk about quite frequently. The aging population is a large portion of the population that we serve, specifically in Albemarle County. And the shifts that are going on with where people are aging, the whole aging in place concept, is happening. And it's happening in such a way that it makes it more and more difficult to provide that access to services. We are putting more and more vehicles out and drivers and so forth, and it's difficult. So we have to figure out how we're going to get ahead of it. And that's where we get really involved in a lot of the discussions that are being had at many different levels, not just the aging, but disabilities and so forth. And we try to figure out, okay, what are those shifts happening? What the population changes are happening? Are people, moving? Where are they locating? What do they want? And we're trying to figure out what services we wrap around that to make sure that they still have their mobility, that they still have access to the services. So for me, I have to go back to understanding, when we need these types of supports for the half of the population over 85, we have to make sure that we're also creating the link to those services. And that's where I think I have a very strong background in making sure that we know how we can get ahead of that. Because right now, the way we provide services are not going to be the same as it will be in 10 years from now.
Thanks, Brad. Rodney?
Yeah, I've been meeting with a couple of state agencies. As a matter of fact, we've met here a couple times on the aging in place, and I think it's a fantastic program. But so far, there aren't enough companies involved in it to take care of all the aging people. And I'm getting older too, not old, but older. So I just want you to know that. And I guess maybe I think about it more that I am getting older. But I can see that the state agencies have been saying tax dollars a little bit. I will say this about the senior center. The senior center has never taken a dollar from the city or the county. They support themselves 100%. I would imagine that if a program comes up for aging in place and that tax dollars may have to come into it somewhere along the line, and as much as I distaste tax dollars, I would probably be one of those that would help just for that, because we are, as a population, getting older. And like I said, these sidewalks they here, I really am glad they got built. I don't know if they're going to be able to use them as much as they should or can because of all the traffic that's going to be on these roads. So,
thank you, Rodney. Diantha?
It seems like to me that this is an area where it would really be good to see if we can't forge some common ground between Charlottesville and Albemarle and even the University of Virginia. One of the problems we have at UVA with employees is time that employees miss from work because they're taking care of a aging spouse or a parent has a problem and has to be dealt with. Sort of the same thing that was mentioned earlier on the other end with the young children population. So I'm supportive of a pre-K program. But to get back to the question, I think it would really be a great community conversation to see what the community, the entire community, could look at in the way of support. I don't know that government can do a lot as far as actual dollars, but there's a role for government in supporting programs. For example, JAUNT. If you have a program that gives you a payback of every dollar that you put in, you get a dollar back from the federal government as a subsidy. Those are programs you really should support. So, you know, I would not want to leave money on the table and not fully fund a program like JAUNT when that just doesn't make sense. But in other ways, government can support with maybe zoning changes, some staff time. But I do think this is a real concern in the future for all of us, and we're going to have to figure out how to deal with it. There are models other places. Abington has a model that's not government, but it's a village concept. There are programs out there, and I think we ought to be looking at what way other communities across the country are helping to solve this problem as well.
Thank you, Diantha. Philip.
I think I remember the question, but I'm going to give it a shot here. You know, family illness has always been a private matter. I lost both of my parents to disease, my mother to heart attacks early in life, and I was a caregiver for her. My father lived 85. He succumbed to Alzheimer's. So I know the issues that folks go through. With our growing population with these issues, it now needs to become a public discussion. We have every program for youth, the underserved, the underfed, the underhoused, and this is now becoming, it could become epidemic, some people say it is, but we have to have these discussions. And I think this is an awesome opportunity for county government, because it impacts us locally, to have these discussions. Keep the partnerships that we have in place, seek additional partnerships and foundations, and I think somewhere along the way we're going to have to rethink how we use our tax dollars. As some may go, no, you know, that's not the case, but in looking at Chapter 7 of the Code of Albemarle, there's a section here on health and safety, and I haven't had a chance to read that yet, but I'm going to read it and see where does that health and safety expand. And sooner or later, if you have more of your population as is a certain age, you're going to have to serve that population. So you're going to have those discussions and be prepared for it. Don't wait till it happens, because I think those of you that have been down this road, it's a hard task to, unless you've done it, you really don't understand it.
Thank you, Philip. This next question has never, ever been asked before in this exact fashion. We're going to start with Dwayne and head west and then wrap around. Dwayne, do you support, and why or why not, the 6.2-mile Western 29 bypass? Are there cheaper, better alternatives to improve traffic? And should there be a public hearing on the 29 bypass and or its alternatives?
I'm glad that question was asked. It is new. I've never heard that before. You know, I support the bypass 100%. We talked about the Hillsdale connector a few minutes ago, but when we first met with Secretary Connaughton, he asked us if we would support a bypass, and we said no. As a community, we are united for the Hillsdale connector. We're united for a widening of 29, an extra on ramp to the bypass, and Berkmeyer Extension, a solution for that. And so we will not accept the bypass until we, you know, these other conditions are met. Well, they agreed to go ahead and fund those things if we would support a bypass. I am amazed at how much we've gotten accomplished over the last 4 years. Do you realize that up until 4 years ago, we talked for 30 years about a dam, we talked about 40 years about roads, and nothing had been done except studying and talking about it, and a complete waste of money. Over the last 4 years, we've gotten a tremendous amount of work accomplished, and now we get to push it through and make sure that it all happens. I am for it 100%. Someone said at a previous meeting that we had that, oh, those things were already being funded, those four things. That's nothing new. I have a letter, and I will make it available for anyone that wants it afterwards, from Secretary Connaughton. The letter that was sent to us originally, Rodney and I had said we will not vote for the bypass unless we have in writing those other four roads that we've been talking about.
So prior to our vote for the bypass, we received a letter from Secretary Connaughton promising those four things, and we also asked them if we could get the Belmont Bridge thrown in on that as guaranteed funding, because that is a major part of our community. That's what most people see when they come in and out of Charlottesville. So if you would like a copy of that, you may pick it up at our desk afterward. But I'm glad that we're having our roads being built so that we can have that infrastructure that we need to move around the city. And it's only going to get worse over the next 40 years. It's not going to get better. So without these roads, we'd be up the creek. Thanks.
Thank you, Duane. Liz.
But I'm going to go for two. First of all, I am certainly, I think the congestion on 29 is terrible. Something needs to be done about it. We had Places 29, as it came out of the Planning Commission, that said that we could actually take just as many roads cars off of the road with that plan than we could, just as many as we could with the bypass. And it was, the design was to do that first, and then as time went on, we would put the bypass in. The some of those roads actually were still funded, already funded. You can look in the six-year road plan for 2010 for VDOT, and you can see money there for the Hillsdale. You can see money there for the Best Buy ramp. And we were moving along with that. And there's a misnomer that that we didn't have anything done here for 30 years because we were somehow being punished because we didn't do the bypass. Well, we had the widening of 29. We had the Meadowbrook Parkway. The widening of 29 was a $100 million project. We built Berkmar. We built Mill Creek. And we've done a lot of road projects in the area during that period of time. And as far as the public hearing is concerned, I think that it is important to have a public hearing on it. I was very disappointed in how it all happened in the first place with the vote that occurred very late at night after a long hearing with no public notice. The network of parallel roads, you can see that plan online. If you just type into Google, go 29, it's very well it's shown very well. The road, the network of roads that have the Hillsdale and Berkmar and the other and the Best Buy ramp are cost less than the bypass, $70 million less. So we have these things in the road plan. We can go ahead and do them, and I think that's how it should have been done.
Thank you, Liz. Jane.
Road issues can be very contentious, as we know, in our community. They are not so contentious in other communities. I had a meeting with Doug Walker, who's one of our new county assistant county executives, about the fire project I worked on. And we were talking about roads in Waynesboro, where he came from, in Stanton, and how good those communities are at grabbing VDOT dollars to improve their roads. I also met with the head of Luck Stone a few years ago about the Economic Development Partnership and drove to their headquarters in Goochland. Absolutely gorgeous roads. I said, how did you get these roads? He said, we get the money that Albemarle turns away. At any rate, our district is concerned about Route 20 congestion and Route 250 congestion. I think all of us can agree that adding to that 29 congestion, we need to find a solution for these roads. At a meeting that Cindy and I were at in August regarding a project called Ravana Village in our area, a guy got up in front of 200 people and said, we need to stop that bypass. It's going to take all the money we need to build improvements into 250 East and 20 South. At a meet and greet I was at on Sunday, people were asking me the same thing, and I said to them, no, this road was approved in June of 2011, and it's going through its regulatory hoops now. Unless something stops it and throws it right back to us in Albemarle County, that road will be built. If it does get thrown back, of course we'll have a public hearing, but I wanted the group I was meeting with to know that that public hearing would only consider what was the best way to solve congestion on 29, that we were not going to try to divert funds to 250 or 20, although we have to start working on those roads as well.
Thank you, Jane. Cindy.
I support the construction of the bypass. Personally, I feel that this is a road that needs to be built. The bypass is a beginning effort to reduce traffic congestion and address the accident rate on the county's part of 29 corridor. Furthermore, the transportation project includes, as we have talked about, the Hillsdale Drive extension, the widening of 29, and the Best Buy ramp. This bypass has been voted on and approved by the county board, approved by VDOT, and it would frankly be a great disappointment to the majority of Albemarle residents if this road and the funding that goes with it would be unrealized.
Thank you, Cindy. Philip, would you like the question again, or can you take it from there?
Oh, let's hear it one more time.
Do you support, and why or why not, the 6.2-mile Western 29 bypass? Are there much better and or cheaper alternatives to improve traffic? And should there be a public hearing on the U.S. 29 bypass and or alternatives?
Who do you believe? And, you know, you asked me if I support it. As you all know, I fought this road because the road actually clipped the property that I lived on in 335 Squirrel Path. The reason I opposed it was because in VDOT's moving that road through that neighborhood, they had little or no concern of how it was impacting our neighbors and our property. Now, we bought the property knowing that the road may come through, so we went into it eyes wide open. After the decision was made to build the road, we went to VDOT and said, hey, okay, you're going to build your road, protect the property. We couldn't get straight answers. I've been asking a lot of questions. I now live in the Jewett District, and in going through the district, I've been asking voters, what's your position? It's interesting. It depends on what neighborhood you're in as to whether who supports it or who doesn't. I go back to this point. I'm still collecting evidence. I'm still getting information from VDOT, talking to folks that, you know, I understand there was a plan. There was a three-party plan. There was a progression. It seems like we went from one to the other one. Then it seems like, and from an outsider looking in, the county was said, okay, we'll give you money for these other projects, but only if you do this. And I keep asking these questions, and I'm going to continue. So I can't give you an answer. I know at one time I opposed it. Now I consider it's out of my hands. And if it does come back, yes, we need to have public hearings. Yes, the stakeholders need to be involved. Is there a way we can keep some of this money and make it better? Because it seems like this is the best of a not-so-good plan. I think there were, what, 27 plans? So there's my answer, non-answer.
Thank you, Philip. Diantha.
Just off the top, no one is punishing Albemarle County and taking money away from us. We've had transportation money for many years. We've widened Georgetown, spent millions of dollars, $3 million there. As Liz referenced, we have widened 29, spent $100 million there. So the money is divided up and based on what the MPO decides to do. I'm opposed to the bypass. It is a third of $1 billion in climbing for 6 miles of road. It took 41 homes. People talk about property rights. 41 homes, 1,000 houses affected. Our neighborhoods have not been able to get out from under the threat of the bypass for 20-some, almost 30 years. And because this came back, now we can't sell homes. So if the bypass is not built, what I am adamant about is we have to take this threat away for the existing neighborhoods so that we can get our property values back up, start to sell houses. The land has to go back. VDOT has to dissolve itself of that property. But I certainly am opposed to spending this kind of money. We should put in the adaptive transportation system, which we've already agreed to do, by the way. The ramp, the Best Buy ramp, should be completed. That's in the works. The money's been there since 08 to do that. We should build the parallel roads. All of these things will help us with our traffic on 29, because basically the traffic on 29, I keep going back to it, it is us. The trucks on 29 are going to CVS. They're going to Walmart. They're going to the grocery stores. 8 to 10% of the traffic would go around, but So I hope, Bob, I've answered that question. And, public hearing. Any change, anything we do should involve the public and should have hearings, yes.
Thank you, Diantha. Rodney.
I would like to say one thing before I get into what I really want to say. $5 million for the Best Buy ramp was put in late 2010. We got it from federal government. Dennis and I went down and talked to Tom Perriello, and that's where the start came from. So it was not in there in 08 at all. We had to beg to get that part of it. And then the price has gone up to $11,150,000. It's fully funded today, though. I have all the paperwork right here. I would imagine everyone in here knows how I feel, what my stance is on the U.S. 29 Western Bypass. Earlier, I don't really know the exact date, but when the bypass was planned originally, I kept calling it an internal road. It has no interchanges on it. We tried to get two interchanges on it, and the state wouldn't do it. This is what it is. You can't change anything. So my next question, can we take it further north? Nope, this is the plan. That $244.6 million is designated to that plan, number 10. So then I said, how about to the south? Of course I knew it was going to be no. So now we've got what we've got. It's getting closer. I've been attending meetings for the last 3 months on due to the cemetery that's in the Salmons and Ferguson property. We're working on that. I can't divulge what's going on right now because we were sworn to secrecy when I left the room. I'm serious. I'd love to tell you. When I was running for office in 2009, that's when I'd said that the bypass was part of my running. It was in all of my literature. I've always been for the bypass. I wanted to move towards improving transportation alternatives in Albemarle County. I have not wavered from these improvements. I still support all the improvements that I've already mentioned. But we still need to look at more. Someone mentioned the eastern part of the county across the Rivanna River. That is a disaster. I mean, we have a bridge at the bottom, and they're talking about, we've been chatting about putting an extra lane coming down the hill. Well, where are you going to go with it when you get to the river? The city has two lanes. So that's going to be a problem to get straightened out, and it's going to cost a lot of money for that. The projects, and I'll just mention the projects that are funded and what they are funded with.
Actually, Rodney, we're out of time.
Okay.
So thank you.
I'm out of time, too.
And Brad, you get the last word.
So my perspective on this project, I think, is very different from most because I'm a planner. And I look at this from what the plan shows. You know, if this was brought to me as it is right now, if I had to decide what they had to decide in 2011, I would not be voting for this project because the data is so antiquated. The growth that we've seen in 10 years has just outgrown this bypass. And that's the perspective I look at, is that this is like putting on a 20-year-old pair of jeans. It's not going to fit our community. And, and so for me, you know, I've taken the position that if elected supervisor, I need to look at two possible scenarios, because from knocking on thousands of doors and talking to hundreds of people, this community is starving for transportation improvements. They are. And they see the bypass as a transportation improvement that they can latch on to. So I tell you, if it gets built, there's still a lot of work to get done. It's going to have a lot of negative impacts. As a transportation professional, I do believe it's going to add to our problems more than it's going to take away. I also believe that it's going to have several negative impacts that people have already pointed out. You know, there's a lot of work that still has to go into trying to get the traffic flow to work the way we expect it to, because I don't think it's going to meet our expectations. Now, if it doesn't get built, that's going to be the bigger challenge, because everybody's going to still want something. They're still going to want to know, what are you going to give me? What improvements are we going to do? Hey, that was $250 million. What can we spend that on now? That's going to be the questions that the supervisor is going to have to face. So whoever you elect, if it doesn't get built, there's going to be a lot of work that still has to go into figuring out what alternatives, what other solutions need to be put into play. And there's a lot of alternatives already being discussed, Places 29, a lot of things. And I think that's where we need to
unfortunately, try to figure out, okay, well, how do we make that work? Now that's getting a little antiquated. For me, the last bit, two things on this topic is the data. I'm a big data person. We need current, accurate data now to understand what's happening in our community. We don't have that. We don't know who's coming in from Forest Lakes and exactly how much time they're spending on the corridor and where they're coming out. We don't know that stuff. And the other is the public hearing side. You know, we just have to work better to try to foster the input, not just a public hearing.
Thank you, Brad, and thank you all for participating in this panel and this forum this afternoon. Thank the senior statesman of Virginia, and thank the senior senator. Thank you all for coming. Don't forget to vote on November 5th or beforehand.
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.